Welcome to Polling Matters. I'm Kieran Pedley. Recently, this podcast has been looking at the different battlegrounds that are crucial to the result of the general election in May. In our last episode, we discussed Scotland. Today, we discuss London. With the amount of attention dedicated to places like Scotland, which is, of course, understandable, it's easy to forget the significance that London potentially has politically as the election approaches. With a population twice the size of Scotland, or depending on which figures you're using, of course, and a host of marginal seats in play, London could be crucial to Ed Miliband's chances of becoming the next Prime Minister. Today we'll be discussing just how important London might be and what to look out for as we approach the election. We will also be discussing the issues that are important to London, potentially some devolution, and we'll be looking ahead to the mayoral race in 2016 and what the current polling might be saying. And then we may even have some time to discuss Boris Johnson. After all, he is the mayor, and who would want to leave him out? I'm delighted to be joined today, returning Rob Vance. Welcome, Rob.
Thanks, Kieran. Great to be back.
And also our guest today, Tony Travers from the LSE. Tony, welcome to Polling Matters.
Thank you for having me, as it were.
So let's discuss the election first. Obviously, that's a thing that's on everybody's minds. There was a raft of polling, quite conveniently, for us last week, in the Evening Standard from YouGov, I believe. One of the figures that caught my eye was that a 10-point Labour lead in London, I think it was it 42 to, for Labour, 32 for the Conservatives. What do we make of that? I mean, that feels quite good. And all the headlines at the moment are about Scotland and how, you know, what a disaster that might be for Ed Miliband and Labour. But, you know, this looks like, actually, given London's historically a Labour city, in inverted commas, that there might be some good news after all.
Yeah, I mean, I think London is seen often as a Labour city. In fact, if you don't have to go very far back to see it as a complete, almost like a mirror of Britain as a whole, for many years, London's vote share was closer to the GB average than any other region. And it's only since 1997 that it's begun to diverge. And I've always wondered whether this was a sort of new Labour Blair factor, that Tony Blair allow people who are affluent and progressive to feel that they perhaps could vote Labour more easily than in the past. And certainly from 1997 onwards, you see the Labour vote share in London exceed its national vote share, and the Conservatives fall below their national vote share. And for many years, it had been rather different to that. So London has been drifting Labourwards. But intriguingly, although the poll last week showed Labour ahead by 42 to 32... in fact, the swing to Labour in London that represents compared with the last general election would be about 4%, spot on the figure nationally. And if that were to turn out to be the case, and actually in an earlier poll, the swing in London was a bit lower than the national average, if that were to be the case, then it begs the question of whether Labour's movement, you know, ahead in London is now being stopped. And that, if it happened, would be fascinating.
This might come back to the story recently about the Green surge, perhaps. You know, do we think that the Greens in London might be the more, I don't know, a trendy lefty kind of party to vote for, or do you think there's anything in that?
Well, Rob Ford from Manchester University recently published a piece in The Guardian in which he looked at the green-tinged centre-left vote, if you can call it that. And it is true that a number of London constituencies show very strongly in terms of the proportion of the centre-left vote that might be suggestible to voting Green. And that will, I think, come as a bit of a worry to the Labour Party in constituencies most obviously like Hampstead and Kilburn, which is a knife-edge marginal, and which has all long had a green tinge in the sort of Highgate part of the constituency. So I think that you can begin to see that in the way UKIP has long worried Conservative strategists, now the Greens are worrying Labour strategists, and of course no more so than in places like London, with a large young and with a disproportionate number of graduates within the electorate. Mm. So a young electorate and a higher proportion of graduates.
I mean, Rob, it doesn't get any easier for Ed Miliband, does it? It feels like he's being attacked from all sides. You know, Scotland, obviously we've got the SNP, we've got UKIP in the north, and now it looks like in London we've got the Greens.
Yeah, I think the point that Tony's making about the Greens is really interesting. There's another constituency up in that same bit that would, so Hornsey Wood Green, with a large number of, which is a Lib Dem held seat at the moment, was in the last 20 years a Labour seat, and before that a Conservative seat, I think, in 92, which actually sort of maps some of these interesting trends quite a lot, I think. And I believe that the Green vote is doing very well there as well. I think the thing, one of the reasons that I think Labour have often, if you like, bucked the trend or have always benefited better in good times and suffered less in bad times is, you know, London is the point about graduates and young people, lots of students, very easy to get activists around so that you know you're not having to send people out on hugely long trips to go canvassing at the weekend and so on.
And London Labour's quite well organised, isn't it? It's got that reputation at least for being, you know, quite effective campaigning.
And so with good grassroots operation, relatively easier to turn the vote out and so on. That's now an advantage which the Greens are actually, you know, being able to benefit from as well, of being able to, and you know, at the general election and in council elections, being able to target their activity very, very carefully in a way in which it's much harder. If you think about their other strengths, you know, Cambridge, Brighton, Norwich, wherever those places are, very difficult to move your activists between those places, where actually relatively much easier to do that in the well-connected London.
But we might be being unkind, might we? I mean, ultimately, the Evening Standard article we saw last week suggested that there might be as many as 8 seats up for grabs for Labour. I mean, that could be crucial in an election that's so on a knife edge.
Absolutely. I mean, you'd have to say, other things being equal, given the mild leftward drift of London to Labour in London over time, and whether or not that's continuing, the swing, the national swing, which is also, you know, reflected in London, a number of constituencies in London, 6, 7, 8, could well switch from the Conservatives to Labour if the polls stay as they are today. Now, of course, you know, the polls may move in the next 90-odd days, and by then, you know, things might look differently. But there's no question that there are a number of key marginals in London, and it remains with 73 seats, a huge block of seats, and they are often complex and very interesting places, you know, for politicians to be fighting over.
I mean, where do you think we should be looking at in particular?
Well, we've already mentioned between us two or three of them here. I mean, I think Hampstead and Kilburn is an absolutely minute marginal. And
almost three-way, right?
Almost three-way. It has a substantial Liberal Democrat vote, or had one, as it may still. It has been the previous seat, Hampstead, was a Conservative seat, and Labour, just Glenda Jackson, holds it. So that's definitely key marginal. The Lib Dem margin we've heard about is Hornsey and Wood Green, but there's others like Hendon, which is very, very marginal.
Something
indeed.
Like 300 votes or something.
Very marginal. But the one that's in some ways most pivotally interesting, seems to me, is Ealing Central and Southall, which is interesting because that's Angie Bray's seat. I think if that were lost, it's suggestive that Labour might, other than that, depending on what happens in Scotland, be getting close to a majority. It's the kind of swing that would be suggesting Labour might be getting near a majority. So, yeah, there are a number of interesting seats in London, and there are some which are Labour marginals, which, if the Greens made a surge, would look more marginal than we all thought they were. You know, places like Eltham, for example, which you wouldn't normally think in this election was in any sense marginal. But if the Greens started to munch up the vote there, it would be a bit more marginal than the current Labour MP expects it to be.
Rob, what do you think?
Well, I think one of the things that we talked about, the Green eating into the Labour vote, of course, the relative weakness of UKIP in London, I think, probably has a sort of, is not the counterbalancing effect that it is in other places. I'd be surprised if the UKIP vote in Ealing and Southall was anywhere near what the sort of the national average in terms of the change of vote was there. So in a sense, Labour are, you know, losing some of their potential support. The latest poll that we saw from the Evening Standard said that, you know, Labour were picking up a really significant portion of Lib Dems. But it's how many of those Lib Dems they really are able to push up, and are they able to squeeze them in those key marginals? And also, you know, there are seats that the Tories could take off the Lib Dems as well. I think, is it Sutton and Cheam? I think somewhere in the southwest there's a Lib Dem seat which is reasonably marginal, and if the national picture was to play back there. I think Hendon is an interesting one, particularly given that Andrew Dismore's standing there again, so he was the candidate in 2010, has been quite active as a GLA member and so on. So I would expect him to take back that seat, unless, you know, if he doesn't pick up that seat, then I think it's going to be a pretty bad night for Labour. That's a kind of early warning sign.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I take the point about UKIP. UKIP don't do well in London, except they do reasonably well on the kind of eastern fringe. It's interesting that if you look at the boroughs last year, borough elections last year, the vote share for UKIP was, you know, in the 20s or around the 20% mark, or getting on that way in Havering, Bexley, Bromley, even Barking and Dagenham, interestingly. So again, it's not that I think UKIP's likely to win any of these seats. The question is, are there any seats there where they could deny a Conservative a win, or even deny Labour a win, interestingly? So it could go either way, in what, it depends on which seat. So UKIP still has, as do the Greens, the power to cause upsets even if they don't win anything.
And of course, having local councillors in those places is really key. The Lib Dems lost so many councillors in London, it's going to be very difficult. But that means, I suspect, that every single Lib Dem activist in London will be focused on just one or two places come election day, which again could have a counterbalancing effect.
We'll come back to the general election later in the episode, I think, because we like to get people to stick their necks out and, you know, predict what they think might happen, Tony. So we'll come. We'll put you on the spot later on.
You've got a few minutes to think about.
But you know, this episode is about London. Thinking more generally about London, there's a lot of talk about devolution for Scotland, isn't there? Mm. Because obviously the vow and then the referendum and that sort of thing. Looking ahead to London beyond May, where do you see the devolution argument going for London?
Well, there's no question that the manifestos, the general election manifestos of the parties, are bound to talk about devolution to what are now referred to as city regions. I mean, Manchester has been making the headway here, partly because it's, you know, it's got this really good relationship with George Osborne, and they've been working together on greater devolution for Greater Manchester. But in the end, there is a wider England question, which is begged now because of what's happening and will happen in Scotland. And, you know, the real challenge to politicians in the UK as a whole as to what to do in England, which is very centrally run, as Scotland proves, not only can you have devolution, but you will soon have substantial fiscal devolution, tax-setting powers. And once that happens, the question of whether London could go the same way, you know, partly following the Manchester lead, partly following its own partly devolved model, partly listening to what's going on in Scotland, remembering that, you know, the London economy is very substantially bigger than the Scottish economy, and nobody pretends London couldn't fund all its own services. It, you know, it's an exporter of tax. So the question there is, how far will any government, new government, and it depends on the composition of that government. You know, a Labour SNP government might not look that favourably on London, but there you never know. Whereas, you know, a Conservative minority government might be different again. So it's all tied up with the future of England. But I do think that because of what's been going on in Manchester and because of a London mayoral election coming, and, you know, there'll be primaries or whatever they're to be called for that soon after the general election, we're bound to see discussion of whether London should be given more powers, both in the general election and in the run-up to that mayoral election.
And we're already seeing, Rob, this kind of regional battle, aren't we, the whole mansion tax issue with Jim Murphy and sort of talking about taxing houses in the southeast and London to pay for, you know, the NHS up in Scotland. We're already seeing that kind of regionalisation of the debate, aren't we? I mean, what's your take on this devolution angle?
So I wonder if most people are actually that engaged with it. I was quite surprised that there wasn't more pickup of the Jim Murphy comment in London in the South East in response to the mansion tax. It made surprisingly little headway outside of a sort of political commentary. But yeah, I think broadly speaking, that is, those issues are only going to come to the fore. I think the big thing is that they're going to need to be dealt with structurally rather than just sort of piece by piece. I don't think it could be sustainable for Scotland to continually drift further and further away without addressing the England question. What my point would be, I don't understand how different London is going to be in that debate versus England as a whole. I mean, it seems intuitive to us that we talk about city regions, but what you do with all the bits in between, which, you know, I think is sometimes patronisingly forgotten in all of this debate, is really, really important. You know, you've got a huge patchwork of some unitary authorities, some other, you know, different things, huge rejection in various bits of the country when bits of Northumberland were joined together into a single council. You know, you've got Labour cities surrounded by, you know, very, very conservative countryside. I'm sort of amazed that that Manchester has such a good relationship with George Osborne, given, I think I'm right in saying that something like 44 out of 45 councillors are Labour in Manchester. Mm-hmm. So I'd be interested in what Tony's perspective was on whether the electoral system would have to change, because I think if you're going to have city regions, you probably can't do them on small first-past-the-post things which end up with Manchester being run with huge powers by more or less a one-party administration.
I mean, before coming to answer that, I mean, I think the Osborne Greater Manchester question is a fascinating one. I know we're really talking about London, but I think what that tells us, you know, that I think George Osborne has been genuinely convinced something needs to be done to decentralise a bit in England, and I don't think many people disagree with that. But secondly, I think most senior Conservative politicians know, as we just said, that they're terribly weak in the urban north. I mean, you know, Michael Heseltine's unique quality is that he's a Conservative who is widely liked in the urban north. Well, aren't many Conservatives of whom that is true. And I think that Osborne, and to a certain extent Boris Johnson, who's, you know, as Mayor of London, made friends with the Core Cities group, that these are Conservative politicians from a younger generation who realised something needs to be done for the Conservative Party in the North. And by the way, there are Labour politicians equally and oppositely like John Denham who think that Labour needs to do something about the rural South. Mm. And I think the Sahi, and it's not for this for today really, but it's an interesting question for these parties. If they're ever to win a general election again, you can't be a Conservative government only winning seats, you know, south of the East or in the East and West Midlands and South. Ditto for the Labour. You can't win them only in the North and Scotland. So, you know, that we are now all headed into these interesting waters.
Mm. I mean, we talk about the prospect of a Conservatives trying to win a majority in the future. I suspect one chap that fancies his chances of doing that would be the current mayor, Boris Johnson. His polling looks pretty good in London, doesn't it? I mean, I was looking at some of the figures recently. Almost 2/3 to 1/3 thinking he's doing a good job as mayor rather than doing badly, which is quite unusual for a politician, isn't it, to have such positive ratings. I mean, what do we think about his position?
I think so. I think that's true. I think Boris is genuinely pretty popular in London, but I think the dangerous thing would be to compare those kind of approval numbers with something like Cameron's as Prime Minister nationally. I think historically it's difficult to find exactly comparable data, but broadly speaking, mayoral approval rating is much better than prime ministerial approval rating. For various reasons, I imagine one of the things that the mayor is responsible for aren't necessarily as important to people, or people's perceptions of what's going wrong with the country or their lives are less focused on the mayor. But yeah, I think he is genuinely popular. I think what's interesting is whether or not that popularity extends outside of London. My perception would be that Boris was not necessarily less popular than other Conservative politicians in the north, but my perception is that outside of London, you know, the sort of popularity might wane a bit thin. But also, let's face it, it's not just geographic groups that Boris or any politician needs to reach out to who's going to be the next Conservative leader. You know, it's the northern cities, and it's also, you know, women and other constituents and ethnic minorities, which the Tories might also be considering when selecting their next leader.
Well, yeah, it's also the UKIP vote as well, isn't it? And I think some of the interesting polling is showing that he's actually pretty popular amongst UKIP voters, which is an interesting square to circle or circle to square when actually how sort of UKIP friendly is Boris Johnson really?
I think it's fascinating. He clearly does kill off the UKIP challenge. I mean, he's very problematic for UKIP, and that will be in turn quite attractive to some Conservative MPs if push comes to shove, as it may well do. I think the other thing that we haven't, you know, I just noticed in the poll that was done last week that we were talking about earlier, is that for some reason, and I don't know if this has anything to do with Boris Johnson as mayor in London, but in London, the Conservatives are ahead of Labour amongst 18 to 24s, which is very not normal.
No.
And you do just wonder whether there is a sort of Boris factor there, but more generally, whether what works for London, and clearly, you know, the approval ratings are, as we've said, very good for Boris Johnson. There's no question they are. They weren't so bad for Ken Livingstone when he was mayor, and it may be a mayoral thing. And remember, mayors have no opposition. I mean, it's interesting, yeah, they have the assembly. It's not quite the same as an opposition. So You know, we may yet find out whether this works nationally. You know, you don't have to go far into the realms of hypotheticals to imagine Boris Johnson as, you know, leader of the opposition at some party and part of the not distant future. And, you know, beyond that, who knows? Mm. So we'll find out, or we may find out.
Well, I mean, Rob, I'm looking at this data actually that Tony brings up. Amongst the 18 to 24s, Conservatives in London 42, Labour 26. I mean, is that a sample size thing, do you think, or is there something in that?
I don't know. What are there, sort of 60 or 70 or something there?
124.
Okay. Well, this, you know.
Yeah, sorry, 97 unweighted.
So
we are delving into realms of weighting.
Put it this way, I wouldn't bet the house on it, but you know, at least some of the time that's going to be an accurate split. And yeah. I think it's difficult. Boris is, in a sense, unencumbered by being in power at the moment. So I think lots of his numbers might well be soft on that basis. I think Cameron was much more popular as a leader of the opposition than he ever, I think, has hit as a prime minister. Ed Miliband might look at those numbers and hope that that the opposite is going to end up being true. But yeah, I think Boris does have a genuine appeal to young people, but it's very difficult to say what will happen in the future, given that, you know, what kind of role would Boris take in a whether it's a minority government. You know, he's going to be back in Parliament. Will he be in the cabinet, or will they keep him on the back benches? It looks, as I understand it, that Osborne is stepping aside and won't be running for the leadership. So it looks like it's going to be a two-horse race between him and May. If there's a vacancy, you know, lots of input. You know,
there are lots of hypotheticals. What if, followed by what if, followed by what if. But of course they are interesting to follow, because politics has never been more fluid than this. You know, it's possible that David Cameron will be back in Downing Street for five glorious years.
Yeah, with a stonking. Yeah.
And, you know, we've rarely faced an election where there are so many, well, if this happens, then that might happen, and this might happen, right the way through to some very wide hypothetical futures.
What we do know for sure is that, I think we know for sure, is that Boris won't be on the ballot for mayor come 2016. And looking, as far as I'm aware, there aren't any really, really clear, obvious people to sort of follow in his footsteps. You know, there aren't that many high-profile people as deputies that can sort of take on the Boris mantle. And I think the Tories are going to struggle to find someone. I mean, I'm not saying I don't have a clue who Labour will actually end up picking. But I think, you know, whoever the Labour candidate is, within reason, I think it will be Labour's to lose, in a sense, because the Tories are going to find it very, very difficult to find a candidate that will, you know, in a sense, touches the places that Boris reaches or something.
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, there have been a few polls amongst the sort of Labour candidates, and there was one again last week from YouGov, and Tessa Giles seems to be the front runner, it looks like. But then there was the Sadiq Surge last week. I think it was up a double digit increase. I'd have to look at the figures. How much attention should be paid to polling like that now? It's just too early, isn't it?
Well, it is instrumental to remember how badly Bill de Blasio was doing in the run up to the Mayor of New York race, which he soon after that won. So I'm not saying that's going to happen here, but it is worth being cautious. And the Labour field is so wide at the moment. You know, there are any of four or five or even six candidates who are not doing that badly, and any one of whom might suddenly blossom. For the Conservatives, I completely agree. It's not looking great for them at the moment, partly because most people think Labour are likely to win. But imagine this. I mean, if Labour were to win the general election, sort of, and then become very unpopular very quickly, which isn't inconceivable, then the Conservatives might be in a better position to win the mayor in London in 2016. And then you've got questions about somebody like Zach Goldsmith, who is a sort of popular, progressive,
quite green,
green-tinged politician, might well seem, you know, a possibility at that point. So I suspect that I don't know anything about Zach Goldsmith, but, you know, some Conservatives may be holding back just to wait and see what the outcome of the election is and whether it's worth throwing their hats in the ring.
Which is, of course, how Boris got it in 2008.
Indeed, it is.
And what do we think of the Labour field, going back to that? I mean, you mentioned, obviously, Tony, it's a very wide field at the moment. I mean, Tessa Jowell, current polling says she's the front runner. Is there anyone that you're kind of keeping an eye on, do you think could be worth, an outsider maybe, or someone that perhaps isn't currently considered the favourite but actually might be quite a strong candidate?
Well, I think there's no question, almost all the polling has shown Tessa Jowell ahead. And she's, a well-known... widely liked across the political spectrum politician, and these are not unimportant. But, you know, Sadiq Khan has been in there, and his poll ratings in these same polls are not bad, maybe even getting somewhat better latterly. You've got Diane Abbott. Now, Diane Abbott has definitely been out and about making it clear she's very likely, I think she may have declared that she's going to run, actually, unlike many. And so, you know, she's visibly out there. And I think if anybody was going to inherit a bit of the Ken Livingstone vote, it would be Diane Abbott, who, you know, was a close colleague, or close to Ken in the past. Beyond that, you've got, you know, David Lammy, again, well-known MP in Parliament. Outsiders, Christian Woolmar, Andrew Adonis, both of whom, I say outsiders, but then Bill de Blasio was. So, you know, so it is a wide field, and what none of us can predict is how the Labour, this special group of people, Labour members and others, new members, you'll remember better than me, somebody will remember better than me, what this electorate's going to be like. How they perform, we just don't know. It's very hard. It's hard enough with opinion polls, even harder with political parties to guess who they'll like on the day.
It's not a group you can really poll, is it, Rob? I mean, what's the Labour supporter group going to look like when it actually comes to vote?
Incredibly difficult to judge, and you know the exact. I'm not sure whether the exact mechanism's actually been nailed down yet. But I mean, if it is some form of primary with a relatively low threshold for joining, maybe you have to pay you know, people talk about a French model of paying £1 and signing up that you agree with the values or whatever. You know, a fairly low threshold, then the key thing comes down, and I know I feel like I've been talking about activists a lot, but actually in London with lots of activists, then your share of activists is going to be incredibly important, and that activist network for lots of these people is going to be built up of local bases, but also the various different things that London has. I think Sadiq Khan is doing well, he's been performing well, but again, you've got to look at what's happening in the national picture. If Ed Miliband wins, then will he really want Sadiq Khan, who's one of his loyal lieutenants, to step out and then go and, you know, be fighting a London election battle? Or would he rather have someone from the, well, he's usually considered a Blairite, someone like David Lammy, actually to sort of get out of the way and then go and be the mayoral candidate? Would that be a good thing or a bad thing? I don't know. But yeah, the big thing is familiarity. Everybody's heard of Tessa Jowell from the Olympics and all the rest of it. So at the moment, I always find it difficult. I mean, it's like the Republican primary field where nobody's heard nobody's heard of any of the candidates, really. And so any kind of general opinion of them is really based purely on name recognition. You know, or having strong, particularly strong negatives, I suppose, is the other thing to look out for. And none of them have particularly acute negatives. I think it would be difficult for Diane Abbott to win. I think there's a sort of fracturing in the Labour vote that would, you know, I think they just about held their nose and went back and worked for Ken last time and it didn't work. I think lots of those people would find it difficult to be energised, put it that way, to go and work particularly hard for Diane Abbott, which is, you know, one of these things that I think does come into...
Well, maybe Chris Christie, who is obviously in London at the moment, actually is over looking for a potential new job. So who knows? I mean, this him and Mary Pat were the Arsenal.
Not talk about River Crossing.
Yes, exactly.
Stay clear of River Crossing.
Yeah, don't let him anywhere near the Blackwall Tunnel.
I think the joke was that he went to Arsenal because the bridge was closed. No time for anything like that, of course. We keep coming back to general election, don't we? And Rob, we spoke about this, your thoughts on this last week. So Tony, as promised, I'm going to put you on the spot. I mean, you know, it'd be good to get your thoughts on what you think about the general election generally, in terms of, you know, where are the key battlegrounds? We kind of talked a bit about them already, but also what you think could happen.
Well, as almost anybody will say, I think, at the moment, you know, expertise counts for less in this field than it ever did. I'm not claiming personally to be particularly expert, because so many possible results can come out of what is, you know, a general election, which comes off the back of many years of decline in the Conservative plus Labour vote, to which you might now say the Conservative, Labour and Liberal Democrat vote. So our old parties have been declining for many years, and they've now reached a point where the arrival of parties like UKIP and the Greens and the SNP and others can begin to not so much win seats, but certainly affect the result. And that makes predicting this very, very hard. What we do know is that Labour, other things being equal, Labour can win the election with a smaller vote share, or at least be the biggest party with a substantially smaller vote share than the Conservatives. So given the way the polling has been going, even if it carried on slightly closing the gap or, you know, Labour running behind the Conservatives, you'd have to say that the hill for the Conservatives to climb to be the biggest party, certainly to be a majority, is a very high one. So if you deconstruct all of that, if I, you know, were I never bet on anything, were I to bet on anything, I'd have to say, you know, it's easier to see Labour being the biggest party at the end of all of this than the Conservatives being the biggest party. But that's about as far as I'm, you know, feel confident to go. And even that's based on the fact that the way the votes are distributed within the constituencies and the relative sizes of the constituencies leads to that result, rather than, you know, any, and I'm not at all convinced that, you know, that Conservatives wouldn't be the biggest vote share, but Labour the biggest number of seats. And I mean, that I suspect is the nearest I can get to a prediction, not a very precise one.
No, but then of course, who knows what's going to come out of any negotiations between each of the parties. In those negotiations that are obviously going to take place, one of the things that's been suggested is sort of PR for local government. I mean, what's your thoughts on that, Tony?
There's no question that PR will be a live issue. It already is a live issue for two different reasons. One is that you're absolutely right. In negotiations about a coalition agreement or a not quite coalition agreement, an agree to support, you know, agreement, the idea of allowing a bit more proportional representation to minor parties that want it is a real possibility, particularly as we now have PR in Scotland, and we have, so within Britain, and we also have PR for Euro elections and elections to Scotland, Wales and in London. So, you know, it's not as if PR doesn't exist. And I'd add to that, some of the election results in the London boroughs now, and not only in the London boroughs, are producing a substantial number of near or actual one-party states. So if you add all of that together...
I live in one of them, Islington.
Well, there you are. You know, either all councillors of one party or one Green as the opposition, wonderful though that person might be, is clearly something that's going to make all pluralists, you know, I'd certainly count myself as a pluralist, believing in the need for the balance of argument and different parties represented and the need for oppositions, then I think that you can see a potential easy win for a big party, could be Labour or the Conservatives actually, faced with one or more smaller parties who want a further move towards PR. So if you add all of this together, and given how disproportionate some of the result might be at this general election, others have observed about, you know, the party that got the second largest number of votes and the party with the fourth largest number of votes possibly ending up forming the government. So I can see PR probably will become a more lively issue and could well be a sop, an element in an agreement.
I'm inclined to agree, because I think the path to PR feels like it comes through local government. So the path to PR through Westminster feels like it comes through local government, because we know, obviously, this Parliament, the AV referendum, was, you know, resoundingly won by the No side. So the idea that there's going to be a coalition agreement or some form of agreement, whether it's a coalition or not, that actually delivers PR without a referendum for Westminster elections doesn't feel like a starter, does it? But actually, if you have something locally, that feels like something that would be more acceptable to people. And then they go to those local elections, see how it works in practice, and perhaps maybe it's less scary than it feels at the moment. Does that feel
Yeah, and, you, and I think I agree with that. I think if you think about the kind of traditional grandees who exist in the Labour and Conservative and Labour parties, the ones who are most likely to resist proportional representation, then those people, I think, you know, like everybody, would be that much less threatened by allowing their local council to get, in fact, some of them, you know, have, you know, might see that as a benefit even. So, and of course, there are potential wins for the major parties in PR at the local level, because if you're the Conservatives in Manchester or Sheffield or Newcastle, you'll certainly get lots of councillors back, which you don't have now, and that might help you win some elections at the general level. And if you're Labour in the rural south, the same applies. So you could even argue that the old parties would gain out of, or the old big parties would gain out of a move to PR at the local level, if you see Labour and the Conservatives as a sort of single interest, it becomes a question of not do I like PR, but is this the least worst thing I can give up in order to stay or to get into government? So, you know, it depends how you're looking at it. And even if you don't like it, it might be a temporary price worth paying because you know that your political future will be in a, you know, well, outside politics. Your future will be outside politics, and other people can then deal with PR at the parliamentary level if it ever happens.
Sure. I mean, Labour aren't, you know, probably aren't just unilaterally getting rid of Trident in coalition negotiations, are they? But, you know, something like PR for local government feels like a much easier sell.
Yes. I mean, you know, and in fact, the things that are interesting sells, going back to a discussion we were having earlier, potentially include some form of city, regional, or, you know, devolution within England. Because, I mean, I think, although I completely agree with Rob's point made earlier that, you know, Jim Murphy talking about mansion tax paying for, you know, as we were, London mansion tax paying for nurses in Scotland, which is actually just a description of the way the UK works. Or perhaps even more recently, Gordon Brown talking about the idea of new welfare benefits in Scotland different to those in England. I mean, all of these things, although I agree they don't get much traction in the popular, and understandably, most people don't worry about these things, but I do think it will eventually aggravate enough English MPs and council leaders for it to become a bit salient. Yes, particularly the nearer to the Scottish border you get, where you're not only you see that in Scotland is there this much more autonomy and higher levels of spending, possibly with lower taxes, you know, in the future. But if you're in the Midlands and certainly in the north of England, you're also a long way from London where the power lies. So you're doubly cut off. So I think that I can see that there will be a bit of rollback within English MPs and council leaders, particularly if the election leads to changes where Scotland seems to be further and further privileged, or, you know, given freedoms, as the Scots themselves would see it, and England gets nothing. And so then the question is, what can England be given? And again, some form of devolution within England might be a way of answering that question.
That was Polling Matters. I'm Kieran Pedley, and thanks again to our guests today, Rob Vance, of course, and Tony Travers from the LSE. The music you're hearing is Pollinate by Kirk Pearson, licensed under Creative Commons. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to seeing you again soon.